Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about computer problems, zeroing in a little about printer problems to begin with. And, of course, we'll be answering all of your questions with Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com. You may have had some problems with your printer since installing Windows 10, or you may have some other questions. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. And Peter Green, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
What types of problems have you seen with printers and Windows 10?
What I've seen is with Windows 10 is sometimes Microsoft will throw out an update and all of a sudden your default printer has disappeared or it's changed hands. In other words, it's no longer the default printer. So if your printer's not working, the simple thing is to go into your devices and printers, take a look at your printer, and make sure it's still the default. Occasionally I've seen it where it actually goes offline. And in that case, sometimes a simple reboot of the machine will fix it. I've seen it where people will just, like, it's not printing, so they'll try to print it again and then print it again. And what you're doing is putting more printing in the print queue so that if you were to reboot your machine and then bring it back up, it talks to the printer and then it starts sending all these print jobs. So now you're printing as many documents as you hit the print button.
I'm raising my hand because I have done that. I think I have five.
I think we've all done that.
Oh, man.
So one of the things to do is you can go online and you do a Yahoo or Google, whoever you use for searching, and search on Windows 10 printer troubleshooting. And there's a troubleshooting feature in Windows 10 where you basically go into the printer, you right mouse click, and there's a troubleshooting option, and it will go into its into the operating system and try to see where things are disconnected and fix that connection.
Okay, so it might be different from one computer to the next, so that's probably the best way to go then.
Yeah, that's a really good way to go.
All right.
And like I said, you know, you go to YouTube, there are people that have probably done videos on it. There are a lot of pages out there that have Windows 10 printer troubleshooting tips. Some of them offer like probably four or five different potential fixes. And then the other thing is, if you weren't paying attention when you upgraded to Windows 10, you were either in a predicament where your printer worked, but it worked slower, or it didn't work at all. In that case, you'd have to look for a new driver and install the driver to update the printer. It's using the old printer driver, but it really should be updated, and that's why it's printing slower. So if you're still sitting there with a slower printer than what it was before, there might be, you know, you should look
update
at doing
your
an
driver.
Update. Yep.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense. If you don't have Windows 10,
some people didn't switch to Windows 10 because they felt that, and people that did their due diligence on the printer issues were like, I don't want to move to Windows 10 because everything's working well. And I give you another example with the Mac. Moving forward with the Mac operating system, not all things are great, you know, in terms of updates, because there are things that have been basically dead-ended. In other words, I just recently went from a Mac Pro that was no longer upgradable, but the scanner was working just fine, to taking that scanner and putting it on a new iMac with the new Mac OS on it, and it looked at it and said, I don't see you. So then I went online to look and see how can I, you know, bring the old scanner, because it worked perfectly fine.
Yeah.
You know, plugged it in. It's a USB connection. There's no anything fancy. And it wouldn't talk to it. And I went online. I looked at it. And it had all these fixes for all the other operating systems prior to the one that is current. And I looked at it and I said, okay, I'm going to try the prior version and see if that does anything. But there were so many hoops I had to jump through, I was like, it's just not worth it. And the new scanner wasn't very expensive. They're between $50 and $100. I needed that. I have a purpose for a dedicated scanner. But my point is sometimes banging your head against the wall is just not worth it.
Oh, man. David in South Milwaukee has a question for you. Let's go there. David, thank you for calling.
Thanks for the program. I have a Yahoo email, unfortunately. And the first time they had a major snafu that was reported, it was for 2013. And so I changed my password. And now they have another major report of one in 2013. Now, if I already changed my password for 2014, I need to change my password for the other one. And also, wouldn't two-factor authentication do the trick, and I wouldn't have to change my password? Finally, I'm wondering, if I use my phone number for that, are the thieves able to get a hold of my phone number or to transfer? They could transfer so that it goes to their phone number.
I don't know if I'd use a phone
number. No, I wouldn't use my phone number.
I wouldn't use a phone number.
I'm talking about a cell phone just for that purpose. That's the only reason I would use it.
For your password to your email.
Two-factor authentication verification.
I guess you could use it for that. That I don't see a problem with that. I thought you were referring to using it for a password. It's unfortunate that they've had some hacks into their system, but I think with there were problems with Google Gmail as well. It's a prudent thing to, periodically change your password. And especially if you're using it on public systems, to make sure that you're not saving your password on publicly used computers.
So you would change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the two-factor wouldn't be enough so that these couldn't get through? In other words, could I leave my password as it is and just add two-factor authentication and I'll be okay?
You'd probably be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd still change once in a while.
Yeah. I periodically change mine.
Yeah.
And it's a combination of upper and lower case numbers and special characters.
Yeah. Yep. So it wouldn't hurt to do the due diligence on that once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Marielle on Facebook says that since downloading Windows 10, her computer will not read CDs or DVDs. Can she fix that?
That probably is a device driver CD or the DVD drive that's in the system, and it might be a simple thing of just telling it to go look online and locating that device driver. The other thing is, you could use Blark Advisor, which is a download, and have it take a look at all the different components in your system and identify it. And then, because if you don't know the manufacturer, if it's not outside, and instead of opening up your computer, you could simply do a spec check on your system and then go and have it go actively search the manufacturer with the model number for that device driver.
And Blark is
B-E-L-A-R-C.
B-E-L-A-R-C, that's right.
Advisor.
Ben emailed to say he's having issues with synchronizing his email accounts. He uses Windows Live Mail and has learned that Microsoft is no longer supporting it.
Correct,
yeah. Yep. How can he get all his email accounts to synchronize the way he used to?
There's a lot of support for Microsoft Outlook, which a lot of people use, and there's usually not a problem with syncing that. There's a lot of support out there for that. It's been around for a really long time.
Microsoft Outlook.
Yep.
Okay.
Also looking at using Google Gmail as your Gmail, system, and then you have it it's in the cloud, so you can access it from any computer, any device, Android, iPhone, iPad, and everything syncs there. So if you use your phone, for example, to schedule you know, make an appointment, you'll get emails reminding you of your appointment in your email, but you set it up in your calendar on your phone.
Makes sense.
So those are two options.
Suzanne in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Suzanne.
Yes, thank you. My question is about getting my Mac laptop, Air laptop, MacBook Air, to be able to print on our wireless printer. I just can't seem to get the printer to see my laptop.
Okay.
The printer is hooked up to a Dell desktop.
Okay.
And I have a MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Dell computer, desktop computer, has no problem, obviously, printing. But when I try to print wirelessly, as I said, it doesn't recognize or see my laptop.
So is the Dell also printing wirelessly to the printer?
I don't think so, because it's actually
hardwired with the USB connector?
Hardwired.
Okay.
Hardwired, yes.
Okay. Usually, you know, when you set up the printer for wireless, you go through a series of steps for identification. So because the wireless printer broadcasts who it is, and it has properties in that broadcast. So if you have, typically it comes with the printer, there's some kind of instruction booklet, or you can go online. There's probably a YouTube video for your model printer. I mean, I'm just saying I would not be surprised, because there's just a lot of people that do that stuff. And there's probably a step-by-step guide for setting it up for wireless. But basically, that wireless printer is broadcasting who it is and how you need to talk to it. So when you go through the steps of setting up the printer, you now have that information. So then when you go to set it up on your computer, on your MacBook Pro or another laptop that's trying to talk wirelessly, Wi-Fi, to that printer, you have the details of how to communicate with that printer. Without those details, and there's usually a name and numbers and so forth, it won't know how to speak to it. So that's
okay,
where...
So what I need to do is set up the printer in order to be wireless.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's... sometimes it doesn't come... you think it comes and it's wireless and it's supposed to work out of the box, but there is a little bit of setup to do, and sometimes inadvertently the wireless part gets shut off, even though it may be a default setting. So some people go through the setup and, you know, things aren't quite the same as what they said they were for factory settings. So resetting it to factory settings and then starting over from scratch is helpful. So there's a couple of things that you can do.
All right.
Okay. What happened is that we used to have AT&T internet.
Okay.
AT&T internet connection, and everything was working fine.
Okay.
And the internet was hooked up. The printer was hooked up. Was wired to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
We changed to Charter.
Okay.
And now the Charter Wi-Fi box and everything is in another room.
Okay.
The printer is not wired
to the Charter box.
To the router.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yes.
That's fine. So here's the concept of what's going on and why things are not communicating. You had AT&T before, and you're saying things were working with AT&T, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So AT&T had its own numerical settings and identification for that printer. When you changed to Charter, it did not stay the same. Charter now has its own set of numbers. So when you go to set up that printer, it's going to re-identify with Charter, your Charter router, to communicate by Wi-Fi and who it is. And then the Mac will be able to see it.
Yeah. So you just need to reset.
Right.
Yeah. There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn talks with someone who is taking a look at the work of 19th century abolitionist Frederick Douglass. Right now, we're talking your computer with Peter Green of Infostar.com. And Pete, before we go back to the phones, do you have any ideas about the types of printers that work best with Windows 10?
I think it's not so much the operating system, because, you know, you have Macs out there and Windows and Ubuntu, Unix, Linux, and all that stuff. Is, you know, what is the purpose of that printer? And there are a lot of all-in-ones out there. So what I do when I'm looking for a printer or a scanner, which I recently did, and why just dedicated scanner? Well, if you have if you don't really have a need for doing a lot of printing, one of the issues you're confronted with is if you don't use the printer and it's an inkjet, then the ink sits around, dries up, and that gets pretty costly depending upon what kind of printer you select. So if you're picking a printer that's got, you know, black and then three different major colors, you've got ink cartridges and the cost of those to factor in. Laser printers with the laser cartridges, I usually save money by buying my supplies, not through, I don't want to say local stores. Occasionally there are deals, but I usually go online and look for, you know, some nice price breaks on that. But the secret to how I pick things is I try to narrow it down to two or three and see what people are using out there in the price range that I want to spend, because everybody's got a different price range. You got a different functionality, how fast you want it to be, how many pages a minute, whether or not it needs to be an all-in-one. And then take a look at the reviews. Mm-hmm. So go to some of the major sites. You got CNET, PC Magazine. They have Editor's Choice, and they review all the different functionalities and the good stuff and the bad stuff. And then go to the shops. Go to Tiger.com and Staples and Office Depot and mm-hmm. things like that, and then look at the reviews and see what the users share with you, because you'll get surprised. Even though all these great reviews are from the independent sources, then go to the reviews of the actual users and see what they're saying about it. You might be surprised and maybe change your mind.
Well, Dolores in Cedarburg has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Dolores.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Hewlett-Packard laptop, Pavilion G7. I have Windows 10. This computer is five and a half years old. I'm having a lot of problems connecting to the internet. Here are some of the security programs I have that might be working at odds. Super Anti-Spyware, Mozilla Firefox, Smart Defrag 5, Driver Booster 3.3. I ran that a couple of times and the scan failed. I also have McAfee Total Protection. I did have McAfee Security Scan Plus, and someone told me to remove that, so I did. I also have Advanced System Care 10. Could it be any of those programs causing problems?
Well, that's a lot. You got a lot of utilities there.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Have you ever cleaned your registry on your system?
Use that. Probably. How would I do that?
Well, it's just a registry cleaner to make sure that all the bad links and program disconnects and things that may be uninstalled or no longer interfering with the operating system. Who's your internet service provider?
Time Warner or Spectrum now.
Okay. Have you called them at all?
I did have some problems with my TV connections and all of that, so they came out a couple of times.
Sure. Uh-huh.
I can't really say that when they were working with that, that the problem, I'm not sure if the problem occurred right there.
Sure. But what I'm saying is, if you haven't talked to them, I think I would start there, because they, number one, they can identify and make sure that there's no issues at all with your equipment, because you could throw all these different things at trying to fix the computer to talk to the internet. But is the internet really, you know, how well is it coming in to where you're receiving it? You know, is your equipment functioning properly? So that's the first place I start, is with the internet service provider.
I am getting Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Here. Yeah.
Okay. But that's one part of the communication. In other words, the internet comes in and maybe it's handing it off to the Wi-Fi. Okay. But if is your Windows 10 a laptop that's Wi-Fi and you're having problems, or is it a Windows 10 desktop and hardwired to?
It's a laptop.
It's a laptop.
And it has Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're saying the Wi-Fi is okay?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what kind of problems are you having getting onto the internet?
I would use Google all the time, and that
okay.
would work. And then I was having some problems, and so then I started going through Internet Explorer, and then
okay.
that would lock up.
Okay.
And then this morning I went through Firefox, and that worked for about an hour and a half, and then it locked up. It
wouldn't. Okay. I think you need to get a registry cleaner. There's a program that's free that we use a lot. It's called CCleaner. So C and then cleaner?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And one of the tools in it is a registry cleaner, and also to get rid of all your temporary internet files, because if you have a lot of those files, that can create some issues as well.
Yeah.
They start bumping into each other and taking up too much disk space.
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any of those you would suggest I should uninstall?
I don't want to go back through them by name, but I would have probably an antivirus program on it. Malware, they kind of go hand in hand. I wouldn't go more than two of those programs. The optimizer software that you mentioned, I don't know how much that does.
Yeah. I'd eliminate that one.
It might have a registry cleaner in it. You might want to see if that's available through that and try it. And the other thing is turning them off. If you have a lot of them active in your right part of your system tray, you should
against each other.
Yeah, you should disable them except for the antivirus and malware software.
There you go.
Because you only want to have them active when you're using them. You don't want them sitting in the background chewing up CPU and memory on your system and not really contributing anything useful.
There you go.
Does that make sense?
Sort of, but okay. I do fumble around. That CCleaner, I used to have that.
Yeah.
The Super Anti-Spyware, should I get rid of that? Or?
If that's one of your spyware program or antivirus malware protections, I'd probably get rid of it, or at least disable it and see how your system reacts.
Yeah. Good
yep.
luck.
Yep.
Thank
Got
you
some
so
work
much.
To do.
Yep. A little bit of work there, Dolores. Mike in Oshkosh up next. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Peter. Larry.
Hi.
Long-time fan, sometimes caller.
All right.
Welcome
Couple
back.
Issues here. Number one, this whole thing about drivers becoming outdated. Microsoft blames the manufacturer. Manufacturer blames Microsoft. And I've lost a few components that I really liked, a rather expensive scanner that would scan negatives into positive prints and things like that. And I've noticed in the last year or two a number of doctor's offices, dentists, things like that, still running Windows XP. And that got me to thinking, could I have a dedicated machine on which I run my older hardware that's running XP? And if I did that, what caution could I take? Are there antivirus programs that will protect me if I should hook this thing up to the internet?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with doing that. As far as programs to protect it, I would probably just do a search and see what's available. you know, in terms of, you're talking about like AV programs, like AVAST and AVG are now, they might be, I haven't done a recent search, but I know AVAST purchased AVG, and they may keep them separate for a while, but, you know, Bitdefender, there are others out there. There might be older XP versions of them floating around. The thing you're confronted with is the updatability of what you install, because they have to package, you know, who's bad out there in the update. I mean, I don't know if people realize this. That's what part of the updating process to these antivirus programs are, is, you know, what's out there and what's bad. And then they package it in an update so it's identified, you know, from a scanning and filtering process that they have in their software. So if you have software that really can't be updated that way, then you don't really have the protection. The only absolute way to make sure that that program or that system, XP system, would be protected is not to have it plugged into the internet.
Yeah.
Right. Now, one more thing, if I may.
Sure.
I had a question regarding downloading software. Like, if you want to install the latest version of Microsoft Office 10 or whatever, mm-hmm. and you're going to download it as opposed to having the disks, but then you buy a new computer,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have the disks, and you lost that email that gave you the registration number or whatever, and now you're stuck. Do you feel that, as I do, obviously, that it's much better to have an actual CD, disk, DVD, whatever,
mm-hmm.
when installing expensive software?
Wow, that's a good question. I've been there, experienced a lot of that. The newer systems that I've been shipped and worked with, Windows 10 has been installed on them, and you can actually create a Windows 10 disk for that system. So there is a process or procedure to do that. Some of the software that's out there, it keeps growing and growing in size to the point where, in some cases, I've seen like a perfect example is Adobe Creative Suite. There are so many components to that, you know, it doesn't really fit on, you know, one disk, unless it was like a Blu-ray. But they make it available as a cloud service, just like, you know, Office 365. So a lot of the software models are going to, the larger software models are going to the subscription service in the cloud. And what we've seen is an explosion of the appware, you know, for your phone, for your iPad, and even for the computer to do certain specialty functions. And that's really been a major explosion, you know, for the computer industry is apps. And if you buy an app for your Android, you're going to have to buy it again for your iPad. You don't get like dual licenses. You have to rebuy it. So, you know, as far as expensive software, I think that, you know, it's really moving to the cloud delivery, you know, the download. And, you know, if it's really too big for, you know, a CD or a DVD, you're putting it on a thumb drive or an external hard drive, you know, to archive it. And those
right.
USB drives are just getting larger and larger and larger. So
I just bought 128 gigabyte stick drive
yep.
on sale at Best Buy for $19. It just yeah. blew my socks off.
Yeah. Wow. I was one of the earlier adapters from stuff that was coming over from the Far East, and some of those drives weren't reliable, but now they've gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
A lot better. Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
and,
thank you so much.
And,
yeah.
you know, for people that, you know, that have an Apple computer and you have Time Machine, you know, at a minimum, just go out and buy one of these stick drive, thumb drives, you know, for running Time Machine. And if you're a busy person traveling around, you know, putting one of those in and just letting Time Machine do its thing so it's backed up, you know, you're going to be feeling a lot better if you have any hardware issues, that at least your system was backed up.
Yeah,
because the costs on those things have really come down.
Thanks again, Mike, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Tom in Watertown a chance to join in. Tom, hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a quick question. I have a Verizon telephone. It's a Galaxy S5, I believe. There's two things that are annoying. On my opening page, it has apps, and there's no download. But under Chrome, there's downloads that are popping up that I don't know where they're coming from, and I can't erase them. How do you erase downloads like that?
Do you have any kind of antivirus on your phone?
I'm sure I do. I don't know specifically what it is.
I would make sure that you do. AVG and Avast both have free antivirus for your phone, because I actually have that phone. In terms of Chrome, you're having screens that are just popping up randomly?
No. If I go into Chrome and go into history,
okay,
it'll give me either new tab, new incognito tab, bookmarks, recent tabs, history, downloads. Mm-hmm. And something popping up stuff on the downloads that I don't know where they're coming from, and I'm not downloading them intentionally.
Okay. You might have some apps that are actually ad-driven, and some of those pop-ups may be coming from that. That's a possibility.
What would be an example of an app like that?
Oh, boy. I downloaded a security. I was frustrated with getting sales calls, so I downloaded an app that would block the sales calls.
Yeah.
You could either have the pay-for version or the free version with ads.
Oh.
So it would block those calls, but you get the ads popping up.
Oh.
So
that's an example.
So it's a simple example that where, you're looking for a benefit and a trade-off. And, what's the cost? I'm still playing with whether or not I'm happy with the arrangement. I'm not quite sure.
I have that issue.
So there might be some apps that you've downloaded, like, there are weather apps and...
I don't intentionally download anything.
So you've not downloaded any app from the Play Store from Google?
Not knowingly.
What I would do is I take it into Verizon, and tell them to help you out with, just clean up your phone and explain to them what the issues are, and, they'll take a look at it and work with you on it.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
But I would make sure you get an antivirus on it.
Yeah. That would be useful for
sure. Yeah. See, we talked about this a long time ago, Larry. Apple is not... It's not like the latest and greatest thing that they do that makes them so good. It's that their system is hard to compromise. There are a lot of features in it that make it very difficult for someone that wants to hack it to make it go south, to make it turn bad. The Android operating system was purchased by Google, but it was an open system. Microsoft Windows was created by Microsoft, not an open system, but not super secure. They've worked at making it secure, and they have these updates because there are compromises that they try to shore up and close the holes to it. But Android was an open operating system, so there's a lot of information out there that people have access to, good people and bad people. So that's why, when I made the change from an iPhone to an Android, there was an antivirus protection on that phone.
Yeah. I was mentioning, when Tom mentioned Verizon, I was thinking about my own experience. I was having an issue with my new iPhone, so I take it back to Verizon. I had fooled around with it for like 2 hours. I took it back to Verizon. I walked in the door, and it worked.
It got scared.
Oh, man. I tell you. Tom, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, Bob and Spooner, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 3 terabyte external Seagate drive on my Dell desktop. It simply stopped recognizing the 3 terabyte drive. Any thoughts on what I can do?
So it was recognizing and then suddenly not.
That's correct.
Okay. Have you tried plugging it into any other machine?
Actually, I bought a new 4-terabyte drive to use the power supply and the USB cord. It didn't do anything different.
Plug it into my machine?
Oh, I tried 2 different machines, too.
So you tried 2 different machines with a 3-terabyte drive and...
Neither one worked.
Neither one worked, correct.
So maybe the port just went bad on the drive. You know, if you still hear it spinning, I mean, you see lights on and so forth.
It's still spinning, but I don't have any lights coming on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the kind of person that if that thing stops working and it's got that much capacity, I'm finding out how to open that up and, you know, hook it up to another machine with a drive kit. Because I have drive kits for a variety of different size hard drives. Because I just, you know, it's to me, it's like, why did it stop working? You know, is it the enclosure that it was in? You know, I just look at stuff like that. So if it's consistently stopped talking to not only the main system you had hooked up to, but others, then I would be wondering if the drive is still good. But it's just the enclosure, or is it the drive that's actually bad?
That's a good idea. You mentioned a particular kind of a drive connector.
Yeah.
Tell me what that is, please.
There's the old versions are IDE. Then there's SATA. Then there's an enhanced version of those. I haven't really looked in Staples or Office Depot or Best Buy, but I'm sure they probably have those kind of drive enclosures, so you can actually take the drive out and put in a new enclosure. Rocket Drive was a popular one for a while. They might still be out there.
I know what you mean. Now, I actually did that on a smaller 2 terabyte drive.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So I usually look on eBay for that stuff because I try to plan ahead and, you know, have a couple of those things in my hardware bag.
There we go.
They're not very expensive if you plan ahead.
Yeah. Good luck, Bob.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks a lot.
Yep, good
thanks
luck.
A lot for calling. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at your computer today with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining us. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And Russ and Middleton are in Madison, up next. Russ, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. The question I have is that we have a laptop with Windows 10 on it, and with multiple users, the profile that I use, but one of the others seems to have gotten corrupted. Looking on a Windows 10 forum, they suggest creating a new profile and copying files to it so that can be made whole again, I guess.
Yep.
Can you tell me? I'm hesitant.
It works.
Because I don't know how to find all the files I need to transfer.
It works. There's a procedure. I mean, it's written up on the internet what you found, or you could go to you could probably go to support.microsoft.com or do a search on TechNet from Microsoft, and you'll find not only articles from them, but you could do a Google or Yahoo search and find articles about fixing corrupted user profiles. The procedure actually works.
Yeah. So I've done some searching mainly on the Microsoft support site without finding a list of what files to copy and move. But if I keep looking, I ought to be able to find a list and where to copy them to and from.
What'll happen is you're basically going to reset the profile name. So, you know, let's say I'm just going to pick a name. Let's say the name was Ann. So, you know, call it Ann 1.
Okay.
You know, as the next new profile. So when you make that changeover, from what I remember when I did it, there weren't a lot of files that you had to mess with, but there were certain ways that you had to do things in order to make sure that the transition was proper.
Good. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I found it, but I'll work harder since I know it's out there.
Yeah, it's out there. And, you know, again, I would not be surprised if there were not a YouTube video that went through it as well that just outlined step by step what you had to do.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
It's a common thing. It does. I mean, it just happens.
Yep.
Or here's the other thing. When you want to transition from old system to a new system, part of the user profile data is moved over from the old computer to the new computer.
Victoria in Duluth, Minnesota, you are up. Hi, Victoria.
Yes. Hello, Larry and Peter. Just recent, I am using a Verizon Jetpack. And I've been using it for a year and a half, I think. Okay, just recently it started that when I turn it on, I have to go into settings and to the Wi-Fi thing, and because the wireless network connection keeps turning off on me. Now, as I put it on, I started calling you. And I did it 21 times. I had to turn it back on again. And it has since been, now it's been on since 11:47. So once it's on, then it will stay on. And I've gone to Facebook and stuff. And it doesn't seem to do, it's like it needs to warm up or something. And it started out slowly, meaning they had to do it one or two times. Then I did it seven times. And then the last time I did it prior to this, it was, actually I've got 14 and two, so I'm guessing that I had to do it 14 times. And then I went and did something on it. And then I had to do it two more times later on.
So let me ask you a couple of questions. So the Jetpack sounds like it's your Wi-Fi connectivity to Verizon service. Is that correct? Okay. Have you called Verizon to work with them? Okay. Sometimes, you know, the hardware that you get for doing these things has a certain procedure for saving its setup. Maybe it needs to be resaved, maybe going through factory defaults and then resetting it and then going through and configuring it will work.
Okay.
Those are things that need to be done with the Verizon tech people because they're gonna go through that with you and they're going to determine that, yeah, this is a good unit or no, this has got a problem and it needs to be replaced.
Okay, now a little bit before this all started happening, I got a message, you know, a little side slot message, and it said something about my file history drive.
Okay.
And I just, because I'm not that well aware of things, I just, I tried not to do anything, so I kind of like clicked it, but it didn't, it seemed to have done something because the next I got a message on my screen saying, a little square box in the middle, your files will be temporarily copied to your hard drive until you reconnect your file history drive and run a backup. Now, I do my maintenance the first of every month, or the first part of every month, and I did do my backup.
Mm-hmm.
But like I say, okay, but that's just something that happened before.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not related to, you know, the way you're having problems with it warming up and, you know, restarting or shutting down. So I would talk to Verizon tech people and have them go through, you know, describe the problem that you're having and then, you know, see what they suggest. I've seen it where you call in to a variety of network companies and what they'll do is they'll get as much information from you as possible. then they'll probably go through resetting it to factory defaults, making the changes to get it to work to what you need, and, you know, then what the observations are. If there's still problems, or you call back because you'll be assigned a ticket number, and you'll say, well, the problem's still there, and then they'll, you know, probably ask you a few more questions and probably say, we need to replace the equipment.
Yeah.
Because you can't accept that just because things are brand new or that they've worked right. for a year that they're going to work forever. Things overheat sometimes. I mean, I don't want to name names, but there are large manufacturers of computers out there that have had to settle very large lawsuits because they had faulty components in their system boards where they would fry prematurely. And then technical people would have to go out in the field and replace it at, you know, an expense that shouldn't have happened. Oh. And, you know, things fail.
Yeah.
Or it was a bad batch, or, you know, you could call in and the tech person says, so look at your label and tell me what the date is on it. And you tell them the date, and they're like, oh, we need to replace that.
No.
You know, I mean, that happens. No. Or they say, what's the firmware on the back of your unit? Well, we know what the fix is. We need to have you update your firmware because that'll fix the problem. So that's why, you start with a call with your internet service provider who may be providing your router or your cable modem, or, you know, if you go out and buy one, is to talk to the manufacturer and have them go through, you know, troubleshooting with you if you're having problems.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck, Victoria. Thank you for calling. And Bob in Franklin, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Thank you.
Hi.
A couple of weeks ago, I bought a Dell desktop, and I installed WebRoot security. Then a couple of days ago, my computer was attacked. I got this box that said my computer was blocked and I need to call an 800 number. I turned it off and turned it back on. That didn't help. So I turned it off and didn't turn it back on until the next morning. Now it seems to be working fine, but is there something else I need to do?
You know, that sounds like one of those scams that was out there.
I'm trying to remember. If you go to my website, infostar.com, and on the left-hand side, there's a tips page you can click on. Okay. At the very bottom, there's a tip that talks about how to get rid of stealth programs. There's a piece of software that's called, I think it's called Nuber, but it will help you identify if there's anything running in the background that is something that you may have inadvertently have acquired.
Yeah.
And and Malwarebytes makes a what do they call it? It's a tool, File Assassin. You could do a search on it. It's called File Assassin, which will allow you to delete a protected file. You know, so in other words, if you can identify that file that needs to be surgically removed from your system, that's the tip on my website goes through that. And I've had it up there for a long time, but I know, you know, the whole procedure still hasn't changed because you have to identify who's on your system that shouldn't be there. And sometimes the antivirus software tries to detect who it is, and it's not able to remove it because it keeps changing its identity.
Oh.
So
I did a WebRoot scan this morning, and it did not find anything.
Okay. So. But there's still the problem there.
You think so?
It's possible. It's an observation. If things are working fine, if your WebRoot scanner is up to date and you're not having any issues with it and it's fine, then it did its job. But if it keeps coming back, then it didn't do its job, and that's when you need to either look and see if there's another update or try to identify the program that's on your system and see. Sometimes there are removal tools for some of these specific scam programs mm-hmm. or malware programs, so you can do a search on that. So those are that's another option to try as well.
Right. Yeah, it's been working fine for a couple days now.
Okay, so. Well, that's good. Then just make sure you keep your antivirus and WebRoot software up to date. And
oh, yeah.
You should be okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Joel on Facebook says he can't open or save PDFs on his Windows 10 computer. He gets a message saying application failed to open correctly, and it gives a OXC00032.
Yeah, well, you can look those up and see, you know, what they throw at you as terms of a solution or what the problem is. The other thing is if you're doing those getting those PDFs through one web browser is to try another web browser and see if it reacts the same way.
There
might be a tug of war between a problem with the browser and the operating system, where if you try another browser,
it works. I've done that, and it actually does work.
Yeah.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest, join in, 800-642-1234. We're going to take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Pete. You stay with us. Taking a look at your personal computer today, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. I guess today, Peter Green. Whoop, Peter just lost his microphone. He adjusts that, I'll remind you that he is a consultant with Infostar.com, comes by regularly to help with your personal computer problems. And Pete, yes, before we go to your top 10 list, you had a note that you wanted to mention.
It was related to the, you know, that call is trying to remove bad programs from your system. On my tips page, number 43, that program is called Security Task Manager from Neuber.com, N-E-U-B-E-R. And what's interesting is it's about finding programs that malware and antivirus programs may have missed. So that procedure I wrote out years ago, but it's still valid to this day because nothing's really changed. If you can't tell who it is, you've got to figure it out. And they offer a 30-day trial on it, so I just, you know, want to make sure people are aware that sometimes things do get missed by antivirus and malware programs. They are not 100%. There's no 100% guarantee unless you're disconnected from the internet and you're not doing anything online. Why do I say that? It's because there's always somebody trying to chase and break and hack into something. And those updates are the result of somebody breaking and hacking and them figuring it out and then giving you an update to download and make sure that you don't get hacked. So there's always that little chance that something can get through.
Well, while we are on your site, mm-hmm. Infostar.com, you've got a top 10 list for this month.
Yep. So the first one is... it's by Microsoft, and it's actually technet.microsoft.com. If you've never visited that, it's a great Microsoft technical support resource. Number two is garden.org, so getting ready for the gardening season.
Mm-hmm.
Great source for articles and searching for anything on gardening. Sustainability. Boy, that covers a lot of areas. So if you go to activesustainability.com, which is number three, there's just a ton of information out there on that subject. Travelandleisure.com, great travel resource. Check out their 50 best places to travel in 2017, and they've got a lot of travel guides also available. Number five, Health Central. Great searchable resource for health-related issues, so healthcentral.com. Number six, you may have seen this advertised on TV, discovertheforest.org, federal government resource on our national parks and forests, lots of useful information on them. Number seven, extremetech.com is a great useful tech resource to keep on the high-tech gadgets and news and articles. And you know, TV advertising, there's so many TV stations and places that we visit for watching TV, but if you have to check out or be tuned into advertising, there's a resource called iSpot.tv. So it's not .com, it's iSpot.tv, and it's real-time TV ad analytics to tell you how effective ads are. Number nine is the CactusLeague.com. So CactusLeague.com, Major League Baseball's spring training league since 1947, and based in Arizona. And number 10, if you missed the Super Bowl ads, superbowl-ads.com. And then I put up another link to another place, give you another twist to them. As always, a lot of creative stuff that we got to witness, and just mind-boggling that was like $5 million for a 60-second ad.
Yeah.
And then I put a Windows 10 printer troubleshooting link up there also as well.
See, Tide had a 10-seconder last night. Go buy Tide, new Tide products or whatever it was, and it was up for 10 seconds, and that was it. So
Amazon did one on the Echo, but Google did one on the Home, which is, you know, a similar device, but Google did, you know, I don't know if it was at least a minute.
Yeah.
Amazon's was 10 seconds.
There we go. Well, let's go back to the phones. John and Nina up next. Hi, John.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My problem is I lost my email about a week ago, and I can't get back on.
All
no
right.
matter what I do, I can't get into my email.
So is...
What's happening is I had everything on memory, so I just, you know, punch it up and I get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And now what it says is when I put in my code,
mm-hmm.
it comes up with it wants my birth date, my mother's maiden name, and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
are those security questions that you answered?
No, I refuse to answer them.
Mm.
The other thing, about 2 weeks ago, I downloaded Google Chrome. I had Windows 7, about 3 years old.
Okay.
I downloaded Google Chrome. And also, my grandson put in something to stop the pop-ups.
Okay.
Or slow them down.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. It worked so nice for a week. And then all of a sudden, I got a pop-up when I went into something, and it said, without pop-ups, our employees they don't have a job, they can't get paid. And it seemed like after that is when I noticed the problem.
Go
ahead.
Have you tried accessing your Yahoo account on any other system?
Yeah, I can get into like Facebook.
But you're saying your Yahoo email. Yahoo email is in the cloud, so it's a web-based email system. So have you tried going to another computer to access your Yahoo email?
No. Can I do that without affecting the other computer?
Uh-huh. Yeah,
yeah.
You're just visiting yahoo.com and going to the email through, you know, a web browser on another computer.
Okay, you know, just... I've got another one I could...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if it works on another one, then what, Pete?
There might be an issue with the browser that you're using, or the pop-up blocker or whatever was turned on your system might be running interference for some reason.
Okay.
It's always good when you're setting up an account if they ask you these security questions. To go through it so that you have it, because, you know, you're using an online service for a variety of reasons, but usually you want it to be secure. So if you're using it for online banking, if you're using it for stock trading, if you're using it for insurance, if you're using it for your medical records and so forth, or your email, if you don't set up those security questions so that they make sense to you when you answer them, then, you know, they don't really know you. they're offering these services to you, but they don't know you. And if you don't answer those questions, you know, then you're confronted with, you know, how are you proving who you are? You've got to go through a whole nother layer of security issues to try and rebound to get access to what you want. So I can't stress enough that if those systems are in place, that you really pay attention to them and answer them so that, you know, if you're not going to write them down and keep them in a safe place and you're going to keep them up in your head and memorize them and so forth, is that, you know, be able to answer them so that you can get back in.
Yeah, there we go. Good
luck. Otherwise, you got to try and reach out to them and, you know, go to another level to see how to recover from that.
Yeah. Good luck, John. Thank you for calling. Dennis in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Hi. What can we do for you?
I am an Apple phone user, as is my wife. And we do a lot of traveling, and we take a lot of pictures. The good thing about Apple phones is they have a terrific camera capability.
Yep.
The problem I have is that I use a lot of my storage, all right, or at least the phone tells me that I'm using a lot of storage. If I go to a print or a photo service someplace or to a Walgreens, et cetera, to hard print some photos, when I connect using my USB cable, the photos don't transfer to the printer. I'm told that's because the photos aren't actually on the phone. They're in the iCloud. They're only visible on the phone because you're using the cloud at that point. If the photos are stored on the iCloud, then why is the internal storage of the phone being used for those? The reason I back them up is to move them off the phone so I can keep taking more pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm confused about the functionality of the photos on an iPhone versus the photos on an iCloud.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were on my phone, why can't I print them? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So the cloud has got a restrictive amount of or a limited amount of storage unless you bump that up. So
yeah, I did. Yeah. I bought the extra, and I have it on automatic backup every day. When I
right.
hit Wi-Fi, they automatically transfer.
Right. So
I look at my iMac
mm-hmm.
under iCloud, and mm-hmm. I pull them all up, and they're there.
Right. Yep. And if you're taking
it, there's still storage on my phone being used if they've been exported.
If they're on your phone, you can, and you're backing them up to the cloud, you can actually delete those pictures.
I understand.
Yep.
Okay.
So as far as
go ahead.
As far as accessibility, you know, you're trying to print those pictures, get. Hard copy printouts. The location of those pictures are, you know, in a folder somewhere on your iPhone. They need to make its way to the, you know, if you can either print to a printer or they need to be transferred to that other device that's going to talk to the printer. So
okay.
If you're trying to transfer it with USB with your iPhone, mm-hmm. I don't know, do they make a lightning USB connector to...
I'm not sure. I had some problems.
Well, I even have a flash drive that I have them downloaded, so I can take them off of there.
Mm-hmm.
But when I hook that cable up, I understand that they no longer, that they've been exported to the cloud or exported
right.
to the USB.
Yep.
But then why do I run out of storage on my phone? I can't take additional pictures without, it doesn't make sense that I have to delete pictures on my phone if they're no longer on my phone in order to gain storage for mm-hmm. me. Once I export them, I should be creating available storage.
Right.
By exporting the pictures.
Correct.
But that's not the case.
But when you export them, you're not actually removing them from your phone.
They're still there.
They're still there. There's actually, I haven't had an iPhone in a couple of years, but there is actually a piece of software out there that it's called I think it's called iFunbox. You'll have to do a search on it. but it actually allows you to talk to your iPhone and have access to all sorts of files on your phone or your iPad.
Okay.
I think it's called the iFunbox.
And, you know, it's also a question of the other space. I had this exact problem last night.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than fool around with the photos, I went to my email account and I deleted a couple of hundred old emails that I didn't need anyway, and then I had space again.
And that's what I do as well. Or I'll delete a program that I have.
I've done that too.
Yeah. So.
But that's the point is.
But it's still in
that's the tedium that you have to do it when you get the message that there's no storage. Then you go in, and then the subject of the picture is gone. You know, so it's too late then.
So it's iFunbox, and it's to help you. It's help you manage your files on your phone. It's a file and app management tool for the iPhone.
It's an app you can.
Yeah. Yep. For the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch, iFunbox, just like iFunbox. And I used it a lot, and you have access to everything that's on your phone.
All right.
Yep. All right.
I'll try it and see what happens. Thank you very much.
Yep. Yeah, thanks for calling. Corey in Oshkosh, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Thank you for taking my call, gentlemen.
Hi.
I am just looking for some recommendations or things to look for a mobile printer. I'm a sales rep that travels outside the office,
mm-hmm.
and I'm looking to put something in my vehicle. And I didn't know if there's in regards to the weather and the climates that we have, if there's something I should look for in regards to having problems with ink, because of freezing cold temperatures or whatever.
Right.
But any thoughts or recommendations you might have or things to look for would be helpful.
It's been a while since I've looked for a mobile printer, but where I would start is I would go to like PCMag.com and CNET.com and look and see what mobile printers are out there. Like you said, you're definitely going to be confronted with, freezing temps and ink cartridges. So it's not something that you're going to want to leave in your vehicle. And also, you probably want to make sure that you've got it mounted on something that's sturdy. So, if inadvertently you have to make a sharp turn or something, the thing doesn't go flying and, all of a sudden you start getting pieces breaking off. The reviews will be available out there. And then, like I said before, go to the sites that sell them and see what the users say about them. Because sometimes you find a printer that fits the bill, and then you read the reviews, and then one or two people go, I wish I would have looked this other way because this didn't live up to its promise. So then they throw in there, here's another alternative that you probably should consider if you need this feature. So, and you don't know those features until other people point them out.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's why I like looking at the reviews.
Yeah.
Okay. And now CNET was a good source to look for?
Yeah. CNET.com and PCMag. ZDNet is another one. ZDNET.com. Those are major publishers for print magazines that have been around for a long time. Computer Shopper Online is still around. They used to do a lot of, used to be a really thick, like almost like newspaper type magazine of just computer stuff.
Yeah.
But it's all online now.
I do that with an Epicurious recipe or something. Yeah. I'll always check the comments, and somebody will say, I didn't have that, so I added this, or yeah. Yeah. I really liked it once I added this additional thing. And mm-hmm. That's always useful.
Yep.
Thanks, Corey. Ken in Algoma, hello.
Hi. When I use Word and I'm keystroking, the letters pop up on the screen, and then all once they stop. And I'll wait about 5 seconds, and then the letters appear on the screen again, and everything starts working good again. Is there a cure for that hesitation?
Sometimes it might be because, do you know if you have a lot of little pictures in the right? Are you, which version of Windows are you using?
10.
Yep. Do you have a lot of little pictures in the lower right corner of your computer? Like little icons or pictures? You might have enough programs running in the background that might be causing some interference and delay. So take a look at some of those programs and see if you really need to be running them. And what you might want to try doing is, the first way to deal with it is, you right mouse click on them and it'll, it might give you a list of things, and one is to exit out of it, so that will shut it off. Once you shut those off, see how your Microsoft Word reacts, if it's better. That may not change it. So another approach is, and you might want to take a look at an article on how to eliminate programs running in the background with msconfig, and that's spelled msconfig. And what you can do is you can type that in and then go to the startup, and you can change or eliminate some of those programs that are starting up and running in the background that don't need to be running, and see, and then you basically shut those off or disable them, and then you reboot the machine, restart it, and then those programs are no longer running, and then see how it reacts.
Don't I have to click on those down the bottom though to have that start up? I mean, shouldn't they be off?
Well, no, they're actually still run, because they're there. They're actually just kind of like in a waiting state, but they've actually initiated memory usage on your machine, and in some cases, depending upon what it's for or what its purpose is, might actually be using some CPU power from your computer as well.
Sometimes there's only one you can turn off, and that's
right.
Enough.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Don, have you got a quick question for us from West Salem?
Yes. I have Norton 360 antivirus suite on my laptop. Mm-hmm. I want to remove it because it's running out for what I paid for. Mm-hmm. And I want to go and put another antivirus thing on.
How do you do that?
You can go in the Windows operating system, the control panel, and go under programs and then add and remove. Or if you have a utility like CCleaner, it has a program removal tool in it, and you can just uninstall it. You could also go online and do a search and see how to remove the Norton antivirus, because sometimes you have to shut it off and then remove
it. Yeah, that's the way to do it, typically. Peter, it's always a pleasure. You'll be back on April 3rd.
Yep.
And we'll do this all over again. Thanks so much.
Be great. Thanks.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. He'll be back on April 3rd, and we'll do it all over again. Just taking a look ahead to tomorrow, Jerry Apps has got a new book out on water, and we'll talk with him about that. And then we'll visit about our Wisconsin magazine. So that's coming up tomorrow. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us.